This episode of Inspiration Point is brought to you by the Quests and Chaos Podcast Network and the generous patrons over on patreon.com/inspirationpoint. So we'd like to give a big shout out to
Garlic Bread, Eric, and Spike.
And at our Muse $20 level, we'd like to thank
Prostaskius, Leroy, Kate, Jeremy, Jenna, Jacob, Falangor, Cheryl, A Bad Idea, Red Dead Coquette, and Robert Hans.
Thank you for helping us bring a little inspiration out into the world. And now, on with the show. All right, welcome back to Inspiration Point, your favorite faction on the internet, your favorite group to be a part of.
So you walk into a tavern.
So you walk
Hello,
into
everyone.
And there's Tiana behind the bar.
Hello, what can I get for you, loves?
And then I'm brooding by the fireplace in a hood.
Oh, yeah. Hood pulled up, pipe sticking out, the whole pipe Strider look.
Right. But then you come talk to me. I'm like, hey, guys, how's it going? And
you're like, oh. I should do that sometime, like buy into the trope of like the shadowy character in the corner and then be like, oh, hi, you guys, how you all doing today?
Right. It's like this big long figure and the chair turns. It's just like a halfling.
Who's just like standing on the chair for some reason.
Yeah. He's just, it's not a cloak. It's his blankie.
Oh, it's the Linus. It's the Linus halfling.
He's like, oh, hey, guys, you going on an adventure? Want a cup? So anyway, welcome back. Good to be with you. Good to be with everyone listening. Thank you for listening. I always appreciate your comments. I may not always respond right away in the Discord, but I do appreciate any reference to anything that we talk about in the show. Hopefully these things are relevant to you and you find them, if not useful, then at least passably entertaining in the moment.
That is like the lowest level that I strive for, is passably entertaining.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we do this. The passion for the mediocrity. Well, how's your week been?
It's been a difficult one. Yeah. But you know what? We make it through.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm part of a Pfizer medical trial for COVID and flu vaccine together. And the first day of that was hell. Yeah. My arm hurt. I was running a low fever. I had chills. But, you know, I'm a couple days past it now. And, you know, I'm still running a very low fever, like 99.8, which is technically a fever. But on the whole, and my arm's still a little bit sore, but I can move it around and even sleep on it now. So I'm fine. And now I just have to remember to fill out my vaccine diary to tell them, here's what's going on with me for the good of medical science.
So is this a paid trial or are you just?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Get your money.
Well, and it's that, and also like, almost certainly, because given how much my arm hurt, I'm positive that I got a COVID vaccine.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like you don't think you got the sugar pill. You weren't in the placebo group.
Nope.
Yeah.
Because like there is a certain amount of like psychosomatic symptoms and stuff. And, you know, my brain is powerful enough that I could do that. But I don't think it's like, I don't think that's what happened.
Well, like if you're like me, I forget about what I just did. You know, my mind wanders and I start going on to the next thing. So unless I'm like actively thinking about something, I don't think I can usually trick myself into thinking I have a symptom.
Yeah. I mean, I have been known to like hyper focus on something. Like if I start to feel like a sore throat or something, which happens to me fairly frequently because my job is my voice. So I talk a lot.
That's a good point.
So I get sore throats a lot, and then I start to spiral on, oh, my God, do I have COVID?
Yeah, I mean, I think every time I get sick now, I'm like, oh, is this COVID? I got
pretty much
my I got the first round of vaccines ever because I was teaching, right? Mm. Well, I am teaching still, but, you know, because I was a teacher, it was like me and really old people, right? In fact, it was really nice. My boss got us all set up. So the whole staff.
Oh, that's great.
Went in over the course of like 3 days and we got shot in the arm real quick and they sent us on our way. I went back. I don't remember. It was like a month or 2 months later and got the next one to finish it off. Maybe it was only 2 weeks. I don't even remember how it went, but, you know, I followed protocol. I did all the things I was supposed to do. I was tired of teaching at home. It was terrible. I was tired of wearing a mask and trying to talk to people.
Mm.
Like, you know, that part was easier on microphone, but of course they were all just like, they all turned off their screens and like went back to bed after taking roll. You know, so then when we got back in the room, I was wearing the mask and then I was like, you know, and that was terrible.
Well, especially because like you've got the big beard. So having to stuff all of that under a mask must have been absolute hell.
Well, it was. So I shaved it actually. And I went completely clean shaven for a little while and nobody liked that.
I think that was when I met you was when you were completely clean shaven.
Yeah, you might have. So you would have hit me at like a very rare point in time, you know, for me to be completely clean shaven. Anyway, as far as I know, I never got COVID after that until recently, where my whole family got it and it wasn't bad. And that could be just me. It could be the vaccine. It could be both. It could be many, many, many things. But it was like I had a pretty nasty cold for 2 days. I didn't lose my taste. And lose sense of smell.
I mean, you'd have to have taste first.
Oh, ho. Got him. That was good.
Zinger.
No, yeah, you're right. My sense of smell is already shot, so that was no different. But that wasn't bad. The time I was the sickest was pneumonia. Oh, my goodness. I would not wish that on anybody. That is the worst.
Yeah. Yeah, I got COVID for the first time in July 2023, coming back from Alaska, the great unvaxxed north.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which,
well, I doubt Arizona's much different in that way.
Yeah, true.
You know, like for long, I don't know how it is in California now. I think I visited like a year ago and they were still like, if you come in our store, you're wearing a mask.
It's not quite as bad. It's not quite that strictly enforced these days. Most people in stores aren't wearing masks now. There is a theater that I do a lot of work for that because it's such a small, intimate, like 50-seat theater, they do require all audience members to wear masks because the actors
aren't. That's tight. Yeah.
It's a very small theater.
Right, yeah.
And the actors are just all over. Like it's a 3/4 seating theater, not quite in the round, but very close to. But that's like the patrons even remark it's one of the last places that still requires it.
Well, and at least that kind of makes sense, right? You know, like, you know, it's not a grocery store, but like you're right in each other's faces. There's no way.
And you're sitting shoulder to shoulder with people who you may not know.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, all that being said, I'm glad that you are helping further the cause of science by being in a group in a specific non-placebo group. That's a stretch.
I see your attempted segue, and I honor it for how horrible it was.
I appreciate that. If you can't be clever, just be extra awful.
If you can't be clever, be funny.
Be funny, yeah, exactly. So, you know, we all want to belong someplace.
Wow, that is a stretch.
Yeah, you ever get into a D&D group and people just have very different ideas of, like, what this fantasy is going to be and, like, the tone's all over the place, the themes are all over the place? One of the things that is fun to do is to kind of give everyone a place to start, to create some degree of restriction in order to better align your party, and I'm sure I've made mention of these things over time, but I wanted to, we wanted to dedicate an episode to it. This concept that we can start with some parameters as a group in order to unify.
Yeah, because one of the hardest things about TTRPGs, in my opinion, is the beginning, because you're starting off with a group of adventurers before they really have a reason to care about each other. So giving them something to unify with that is external really helps with that. So like for Lost Mines of Phandelver, for me, I still call it that. It's Phandelver and Below. But with Phandelver and Below, they all start from one person knows Gundren Rockseeker and then hires everyone else to go with him to go help with this thing.
Yeah.
And that's the unifying point.
Mm-hmm.
That's still a challenge in a lot of ways, because some people are more invested in one thing than another, and that makes it, you know, different levels of buy-in makes it a challenge before they start actually caring about each other as characters. So in my opinion, the hardest thing about a TTRPG is the first 3 to 5 sessions.
Mm, yeah, I can see that. I love session zero. Session zero is like, in a lot of ways, at least for me, like the most fun.
Oh, yeah. Because then you're throwing ideas around and everything.
It's just madness. Like
it's a rampant possibility.
Yeah, it is. It's all possibility. You know, I love that so much. But yeah, you're right. Like trying to establish the why are we here and why are we together and why don't we just leave each other alone immediately? You know, that can be kind of tough depending on the type of campaign that you're doing. There's certainly nothing wrong with saying you all meet in a tavern. Anyway, there's a dungeon. Go there. Right. It's fine. You know, to a degree, everyone at the table is like, well, I'm here to play Dungeons and Dragons, so I'm not going to really fight that too much. I mean, every now and then you get your one guy, but don't play with that guy.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, it's a trope for a reason, because it works and it's so deeply engraved into the zeitgeist, not just from TTRPGs, but from like Lord of the Rings or other fantasy stories where, you know, you walk into a tavern and there's your quest giver.
Yeah. So, you know, and I'm sure we're not by any means the first people to come up with this concept of just saying, okay, you're all a blank, so make a character within that. So in one campaign that Chris ran back when we were in college together, we were all part of the same elf family. So we're all high elves. Right?
Oh, I love that.
And it was like a city-based game. I did a game back in college where everyone was part of the same drow house. And so it was, I had just read like the Dritzt books, and I wanted to do the like house politics and assassinations with each other. That had a lot of fun things. It also had a lot of problems.
Well, sure. Drow society is kind of difficult to work within, frankly.
It's very difficult. I think it would be pretty good for a short campaign or like a one shot, but it got very tiresome because everybody was like role playing well, which meant that they were trying to backstab each other and they were creating alliances and they were trying to, yeah, murder one another.
And which is a fun story to read, but not necessarily a fun one to play.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. And it just ran into that problem almost right away, because I think if it were like, I think the safe way to do that would be like, okay, for whatever reason, your house is now separated from drow society.
Ooh.
And now you've got to learn to work together to survive. And then by the time we return to drow society, we as a house are different. We're changed in some way. That would have been like the nice way to handle it. Right. But that's not what I wanted to do. Right. I wanted to do the stuff that, you know, Ari Salvatore would have wrote.
Yeah, the politicking.
Yeah, and I love that they were doing that, and they were super bought in, and no one did a bad job. It was hard to stay motivated because there was a lot of stress involved for everybody, because they didn't know if they were going to live or die in any given session, and who is going to do that to them. Because it's different when it's an NPC versus when it's another player. Because then there's like a inherent, like, I'm better than you kind of thing you know, that I don't think really appeals to a lot of RPG players.
That's fair.
Or maybe even a lot of people, right? Like, no, like there's always that uncomfortableness where you're like in between, like, is this argument about our characters or are we talking, you know?
Yeah, I have been part of a table that actually fell apart because of something like that, which is why whenever there's in-character conflict, I always immediately afterwards go, hey, are we good? Do we need to talk about anything? There's actually a player who I love sparring with. Our characters will go hammer and tongs. Like, my character tried to shoot his character at one point. And we just look at each other and go, that was so much fun.
Right. Like, that's, we're not seriously going to end each other's fun.
No.
But we're going to play these tropes that we've seen in media and stuff like that. You know, like the two frenemies or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or even the two really people like who that. Loathe each other but are together for a common cause that is bigger than both of them.
Correct. Yeah. And that can be very fulfilling. And that, but that definitely takes a certain level of player maturity, you know.
Well, and also trust. Like, that was the third campaign that I'd sure. been in with that player. So, like, we knew each other very well at that point.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, some other things that I've done as far as groups go, I've done the factions out of the D&D book. So, you know, if you do Tyranny of Dragons or anything like that, you know that there's the main factions, right? So I actually went pretty in depth with this, and I wanted all of my characters' classes to feel similar enough that they like had sort of a theme. And so I wouldn't necessarily say you have to do anything like this. Like, I did it and it was fine, but it didn't dramatically change a lot. But it did make those first few sessions a lot easier.
Sure.
To say, like, you're all on the same team. So I used the D&D factions, the Zhentarim, the Emerald Enclave, the Order of the Gauntlet, the Harpers, the Lords of Alliance, and the... I guess that was it, right? I also had a section for like negotiable and then stuff that was just outright banned that I just didn't want to.
Which I noticed is pretty much all of the Mercer subclasses.
Almost entirely, right? and there
which,
was
fair enough.
Yeah, and there was one that was like redundant to something that already existed. But yeah, it was pretty much all of the Mercer stuff. I just didn't want to deal with it. You know, I had one Chronergy Wizard. I regretted it pretty hard because that is one powerful class. Yes, I know as a GM, just get good. But like, holy crap, that's a powerful class.
I mean, but there are powerful subclasses. Like there is like the power creep that has been happening in the
true.
Books lately, because like as much as I love Light Domain Cleric, it does not hold a candle fairly literally to Twilight Cleric.
So, yeah. And right now I have a Bugbear Gloomstalker in one of my groups. And so he just deletes the map before anyone else gets to play. But they're fine with that because, you know, they're like, whatever.
I mean, like, if exploration on the map is not the tier of gameplay that they're interested in, having someone be able to just do that is pretty great.
Well, the Gloomstalker is also godlike at that, right? They're the only place where they kind of suck is in social interaction, right?
So, I mean, that's very fair. I understand that.
As far as everything else goes, I mean... He's basically invisible all the time. So that's just a ridiculous class and a ridiculous race combination to go with it. But at least I like kind of knew what I was in for. Right. So I was kind of like going, OK, I just need to adjust so that, OK, we have a big threat on the board. They're going to identify that big threat. They're going to delete the big threat and then we'll be in combat. And that's just going to be OK. We're just going to say that's fine. You know, anyway, not here to talk about class balance.
You got good.
Yeah. Well, I got good with that one, right? Cause I was a little bit more familiar with it. I wasn't familiar enough with Chronergy, and yeah, I should have sat and read it and I didn't. So That was my bad on that.
That's kind of just how that works.
It's just kind of how that works. Also, the player was like extremely intelligent, so it was like hard to beat.
Well, it's also fascinating. Tangent for a second. It's fascinating to GM for a class that you're not, or a class or a subclass that you're not familiar with. I'm doing that with Fendelver and Below, where one of the players talked me into letting him play a Blood Hunter. I was like, I have never played this class. I have no interest in ever playing this class. What about this appeals to you? And he's turned into the anxiety Blood Hunter who occasionally has just like Hulk out barbarian blackout rages. And I'm just like, okay, that's actually pretty interesting. Let's see what story we can tell with that. But as far as mechanically, I still don't understand the class. Because it's like it's like the unholy love child of a warlock and a ranger.
Yeah, yeah. Which is those are two very, very strong classes. So that's pretty scary. I love the design of warlock, but that's anyway. We don't want to.
we could go into just like class discussion, and that's not the topic today.
We could throw that on the list, right? Is just like our favorite classes. But okay, so what I did for these five factions was, and I did leave off the Kraken Society because I was like, okay, that one's just going to be NPCs. The Zhentarim were going to be our like darker classes, the stuff that so it has things like Conquest Paladin, Oathbreaker, Death Domain, Grave Domain. Assassin, Aberrant Mind.
And just so many warlocks.
Necromancer. Yeah, a bunch of warlocks. It was, you know, these are our edgelords. That's where they're all going to go, right? And so, you know, it would make less sense to have a lot of those in the Emerald Enclave. Now, of course, if you are really creative and can come up with a great answer to any of these, then... You know, at the end of the day, everything's negotiable.
Sure. But
this is a fun way to organize. And actually, the players really like this. It helped knock down their choices. So to make them a little bit more concise, there's still plenty of choices within each of these. You know, there's still like over 20.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's a lot to pick from. Emerald Enclave, of course, was all the nature-y stuff, right? Order of the Gauntlet was a lot of your... you know, militant, but divine magic type stuff. So paladins, clerics, we had the zealot barbarian over there, you know, so there was like little, I actually put the inquisitive over there so that you could have like your inquisitor archetype for your holy warriors. The harpers were all like your spies, and your sort of Gish characters.
Gish?
Oh, you're not familiar with Gish?
No.
That's kind of like your spellcaster fighter. You're like, it's like Eldritch Knight or Bladesinger, even Paladin to a degree.
Okay.
By itself is that. I don't remember why it's called that, but it's basically like a mix of sword and sorcery.
Okay, that's cool.
It's like that solo build that everyone wants to do where they can do a little bit of everything. But yeah, it's usually sword plus magic.
Oh, apparently it originally came from a Githyanki fighter wizard combination.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, so that makes sense.
Sorry, yeah. I was very curious about this, so I did a quick Google.
Might as well. Yeah, why not? Yeah, give people information. And then of course there was the Lords Alliance. Which was more about political challenges, because I was like, okay, we're going to have some militant types in here, but also should be like a lot of wizards and stuff, because they're going to be about trying to maintain order within their alliance, not just about like crushing the infidels, right? So what kind of came out of this that was also interesting was not only that the classes were going to have certain themes, but also they would change the overall challenges to expect from the game. So if they had chosen Lords Alliance, this would have been a much more political game.
Hey everyone, Editing Tiana here. Just wanted to drop in here and say, there is a little bit of a problem that happened in the middle of the recording here. So what happened was Adam goes to the school now in order to record because of quiet and better internet and all sorts of other reasons, but that also means that he's a little bit more subject to other people handling the internet. So the internet went out. We've spared you the 5 or 6 minutes, I think it was, of him muttering to himself and me taking out my knitting to wait to see what was going on and if he was coming back. But we do kind of pick up with we're not exactly sure where we left off, so forgive us for that little bit there, and enjoy the rest of the show.
I don't remember what you were saying when you suddenly, like, got off.
Yeah, no problem. So the factions were not only there to sort of align the theme of the subclasses, although it does do that, it also would change how the expected gameplay would be, right? And what the goals of the game would be. So if people chose Lord's Alliance, for instance, it would be a much more political game, right? It would be about, you know, trying to forge and maintain alliances. It would be about trying to navigate more social challenges as opposed to many of the others.
Sure.
The Harpers would be much more of like a spy and heisty campaign where we're trying to outsmart our opponents. Probably a lot of infiltrations, a lot of stealth, that sort of thing. Order of the Gauntlet would be like more military warfare, sort of big campaign type ideas. Emerald Enclave would be, you know, obviously a lot of times in the wilderness, big monsters, threats to nature, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Probably solving balance problems through rituals. Zentarum, of course, is like, we're not going to necessarily be evil. We could be, but we are definitely not going to shy away from slaughtering things. This is like very good for your players that are more interested in like just murdering stuff.
it's also a lot more ends justify the means.
Yeah, it can, because the Zentarum are not good guys at all, but they are a hierarchy with a single guy at the top. And the further and further out you go, the more open-ended the interpretation of the Zentarum becomes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, a lot of them are slavers. A lot of them are, you know, they can be drug dealers. They can be assassins. They can be all kinds of things. But sometimes, you know, maybe we hire the Zentarum to do a thing that is overall for the good of the people, but maybe it's not something that the Order of the Gauntlet wants to dirty their hands with.
Right.
So they're... It could be like the giant. So I use this idea for Storm King's Thunder, because Storm King's Thunder makes use of the different factions. And so the Zentarum could be like, okay, we need the Zents because the giants are destroying settlements and someone needs to come in and bring order. And, you know, as Littlefinger would say, chaos is a ladder. So Zentarum are helping for the purpose of ultimately controlling,
right?
But at least in the short run, you as the player are here to, let's say, liberate the town, right? We're bringing democracy, guys.
Oh boy.
and then once the threat's out, you know, it's more like under new management. But then maybe what happened in my game is, they actually did choose the Zentarum because they wanted to run around and murder stuff.
I mean, they're kids, right?
They're kids, right?
So kids either befriend everything or commit war crimes.
So after they got their fill of committing some war crimes, I, of course, made their bosses like real a-holes. So they had no love for them. And then eventually they end up betraying the Zentarum and doing their own
thing.
Yes. And I think that was almost inevitable. It was definitely something I had accounted for, right? Like, are we gonna... they definitely had the are we the baddies kind of moment, and then decided that that wasn't what they really wanted to do. So it ended up just being as a springboard into a better campaign.
We actually did something like that with our with a Call of Cthulhu game, actually, Down Darker Trials. This is something that has aged very interestingly. We were all members of the Pinkertons.
Oh.
It has aged very interestingly. But we were members of the Pinkertons in like the late 1800s.
Right.
So like we were going on various missions for them. It was because Down Darker Trails for us was a collection of missions that we got sent on with very little like overarching story besides you are members of the Pinkertons, go do thing.
You're right, yeah.
And I think we got maybe two or three missions in before we were like, this is not working for us anymore. We're going to part ways with the Pinkertons because we're seeing things. It wasn't even so much that they were bad bosses. It was much more that we were starting to see the Lovecraftian horrors.
Right. You're like, this is a lot bigger than your petty problems.
Yeah.
Of
and
like,
we like money. We like making money. But there is stuff going on that we can't explain and don't understand. And it keeps following us. So we're going to go our own way. Thanks. There were biblically accurate angels involved.
Mm-hmm.
And clones.
Nice. All right. So floating eyeballs with wings and golden rings and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. That was great. My character never saw one, as far as I recall. Susanna never saw one. but two of the other characters, Elias and Jared, both saw them constantly. But it was interesting starting because like that was our immediate point of contact was you're all members of the Pinkertons and you've done a couple jobs together. What that means to you is up to you. But you already have this like basis of knowledge with each other, which made the first few things much easier. And then we started trauma bonding because of how bad things went.
Nice. That's fantastic. And I wish I had done that with my drow game, right? Like making it a, well, let's leave now and let's learn something. Yeah, so I mean, in any of these groups can be a starting point, but they don't necessarily have to be an end point, right?
Mm-hmm.
One thing that, I've always heard of, I've never done this, but I have heard of like, okay, everybody's a bard, right? And so you're all part of the same band, you know, or you're part of, or you're like a group of troubadours or something, and you're going around from place to place.
You're off to win the Battle of the Bands.
Yeah, correct. And so that, you know, that could be great for like a comedy game or whatever. If you're doing a group of clerics, you're just power gaming, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
You're just there to destroy everything.
Oh, just yeah.
Dominate the game. Doing one race, doing one class, doing one faction, doing... maybe even that's one background. Like you all have to pick soldier or you all have to pick noble.
That would be interesting.
I think we did all noble for Curse of Strahd. Because we were all part of the same family. Like we were literally all blood relatives.
Mm.
So one of us was the father. That was me. Chris was the mother. Because of course. And,
of course.
Then the two other guys were our boys. And one of them was adopted, but he didn't know that.
Ooh.
So, because I might have kidnapped him when I killed the rest of his family.
Oh, so you had an Odin and Loki situation.
Yes, I did. Yeah. yeah, very much. Or like Gangs of New York, you know. My character was like evil, but like becoming less evil because of the influence of family.
Mm-hmm.
And so he went in very Machiavellian, and then he was, like, becoming vulnerable and softer. Unfortunately, that game didn't come to an end.
Mm.
I mean, it came to an end, but not, we didn't end it.
It didn't come to a conclusion, it just
right.
stopped.
It just stopped. Because we had some player dynamics that weren't working, unfortunately. I think, and Andrew was GMing that game, and I think he was already burning out by the time he started. But it was, he did a great job of setting atmosphere, and it was really interesting. And it was, there was a lot more of an intensity for me, because I definitely got into character, and like the idea of my boys being threatened or my wife being threatened was very different, right? When Strahd is like drinking her blood.
Oh.
You know, I that was hard not to take super personally, right? And like, I need to avenge my wife's honor, right? And it gave Strahd very sort of rapey vibes, you know, that made me want to fight him, right? Which is very effective, but also, yes. You know, got that emotion going. When your party member is low on hit points, it's one thing. When it's your son who's low on hit points and is going to die in front of you, that's different, right? And so it was very effective, maybe too effective in some ways. It'd be like playing Oregon Trail, then naming everyone after your family, right?
Oh, like, no.
Probably not a great idea. Unless you hate them, I guess.
Huh.
So that's one of the benefits / drawbacks of this kind of thing.
Sure, because like having that immediate connection is pretty great. I mean, I'm watching Dropout doing something actually very interestingly similar. They're playing Burrow's End where they're all stoats.
They're all what?
They're all stoats.
I'm not familiar with what that is.
It's a creature in the weasel family.
Oh,
They're little guys. They're adorable. And interestingly, they're all family members. So Erika Ishii is playing Brennan's character's mother, and Brennan is playing the mother of two of the people who are at the table. And then another character is playing his character's sister and her husband. So they're a family, and the family dynamics are pretty excellent. Watching Brennan lose his mind over the course of the game as his character's family is being threatened is pretty incredible. It's honestly one of the most effective seasons that Dropout has done, in my opinion. And it's partially because they have that very tight-knit connection that Abrea then uses against them, and they weaponize against her as well.
Oh, wow.
It's very good. I highly recommend it.
Remember to make all your players related so that way the drama is much more intense.
I mean, I will say that when we got deeper into Blood and Thunder, it was much more personal when like Roland was in danger or when Jaxton was in danger. It was much more of the visceral, I will not let you go down.
Yeah.
Okay. As opposed to like, because usually I don't necessarily metagame, but I do like think logically through, okay, you know, if they go unconscious, I can do X, Y, and Z and this will be fine. Yeah. But when I'm in character as Caladry watching Roland getting the crap kicked out of him, it's a lot more visceral.
Right. Yeah. Because it's not just like, well, I have healing words, so whatever. You know, I can just break all the drama right now.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's also the, okay, my companion's at 5 hit points. Do I heal them for 8 only to watch them drop the next turn? Or do I let them drop next turn and then I heal them and then they're at 4 hit points or whatever? Mm-hmm. You know, like, unfortunately, the second option makes more sense.
Logically, absolutely. But if you're in character and you're not thinking about it like that.
Correct. Yeah. You're going to throw out the heal.
It's much more interesting.
You're trying to preserve them or you'll go on the attack or something. Like you'll do something that's not strategically sound, but is interesting in terms of role playing. Right. And I think that that's extremely helpful because honestly, if you're playing a balanced encounter, it's pretty hard to fail, actually. You know, once you're post like, I don't know, level 2. Right.
I'm going to say 3 because 3 is where everyone has their subclasses.
Right. Yeah. It's like All right, everybody's pretty strong now. At level 5, we can handle a lot of things that are technically supposed to be above our pay grade, right? And then, like, level 14 characters can do anything they want, right? it's just crazy. Level 1, like, the dice can just decide you die.
Level 1 and level 2, especially with some of the things that come up in modules. I think that module writers forget just how squishy level 1 and 2 characters actually are.
Yeah, or they really want to create that sense of drama and danger.
Could be.
But then they create things like Goodberry and Healing Word, so what the heck, guys?
Oh, come on. Inflict Wounds at level 1.
Inflict Wounds is so cool, man.
It's broken, and I love it.
That's a great spell. Really enjoy it a lot. I hate Healing Word because I can never get the drama I want because someone going down is barely even an inconvenience, right? And so at least Cure Wounds, you got to run over to the guy. And it takes an action, right? Like, you're killing the action economy instead of the player, which also creates a lot of pressure. The Healing Word's a bonus action. And there's no negative hit points. So it's not like, so it's just so good. Anyway, I won't harp on that for too long.
It's pretty great. So one of the things that I would say about, like, having the group thing is this is another area where I will bang the drum of session zero over and over again.
Right,
and I think that one of the big things about using this sort of thing is having a session zero where you treat it a little bit more like a Powered by the Apocalypse game, where you figure out how everyone is connected to each other. That is, in my opinion, one of the powers of games like Monster of the Week or Thirsty Sword Lesbians, where each of the playbooks is given a series of questions where they ask, you know, who is a person that has betrayed you, and what, and did you ever find out about it? Like, these things that give you really deep emotional connections to other people, good and bad, but you already have history effectively with these people. And that helps really kickstart that initial, because, I mean, everything changes in playing. The story always changes in the telling. But I think that that Powered by the Apocalypse handles character creation really well in that aspect, because it builds that web of connections immediately and really just change, like, the way the story goes. I'm in a podcast called Roll for Weird, where we're playing Monster of the Week, and it was meant to be a one shot. It was a classic. This was supposed to be a one shot game. And then it wasn't.
Then it wasn't. Oh,
yeah. And I basically built the femme Dresden. So, you know, her name is Misty Charlotte Palladino, named after, like, several different magicians throughout history, and she's a spell slinger who mostly works with fire. So I built her to be the female Dresden, because I was like, okay, I could just, like, grab this quickly for a one shot.
Right. Yeah.
But then in the character creation, we were establishing who was connected to who, and we decided between us that Silas, who's the elderly vampire character, is her great great grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean for a spell slinger that her great great grandfather, who she just calls granddad, is a vampire who is literally monstrous?
Yeah, that's interesting.
It was pretty cool. And we still need to finish that campaign. We haven't played in a while.
We need to turn Honey Heist into a full length campaign, right? Where it's like it's all dramatic, but it's just bears in costumes. They're all having this, like, dramatic dialogue with each other, but it's all about stupid things because they're still just bears.
No, I do not have time to take on another campaign. Don't get my wheels turning like that.
I don't think this is the kind of campaign that actually requires any preparation whatsoever. I think you just show up and say, bear at each other.
Have one big heist that you're going for. Is that going to take one session to sort out stealing honey from a honey con? It's gonna be a whole season.
Yeah, it's just
God, it's Leverage, but with bears.
But the Palace of Honey is, it's literally just like a Walmart. It's just about some bears that try to go to Walmart. That's it.
I mean, we have to do this now. I hope you know that.
That's great. And the big dramatic death scene is just bears overreacting to getting shot with tranquilizers.
You were my brother. I loved you.
Correct. And then just start snoring loudly.
Oh, no. Let us know in the Discord if this is something that you'd be interested in seeing us do, because I have ideas now. And I
oh,
might,
no.
I
what
might,
have I done?
You started this.
Sweet Paw McGraw return.
Oh, my gosh.
Heck yeah. This is going to be fantastic. I can't wait. This is going to be a great role-playing game.
I'm gonna put that aside for the moment because we're still recording.
Oh, right after you're gonna start a Google Doc. You're like, I regret this already.
That's gonna be the name of the Google Doc. Mistakes were made.
Mistakes were made.
Now I have to think of like a honey pun for mistakes were made.
A sticky situation.
Damn it. But yeah, there are a lot of pros to starting everyone off as being part of the same faction or group or family or anything like that. It really is a good way to kickstart things. And, you know, maybe it drops off later. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe if you go with like the Order of the Gauntlet or the Lord's Alliance, the characters are able to perform various machinations to become one of the lords on the Lord's Alliance.
Yeah, it could happen. We can really buy into it. We can eventually grow out of it. We can completely turn it on its head, you know. And this could be great for creating sort of your own canon, right? Your own universe with the D&D lore. Like, I know there are groups out there that they're just going from module to module, and they're kind of creating their own cinematic universe in a way.
Sure.
And in doing that and using the factions could be a good way to do it. Another good way to do it would be just pick a location, right? Like, you're all from Waterdeep. Now go do a bunch of research on Waterdeep, and because that's a big city. Or you can even go smaller and like you're all literally from like Beliard or something, you know, like try
we're
to find
Golden Fields.
We're all from Golden Fields. That would be great. I would love that. That's where Sweet Paw would actually come into the D&D universe. I was just
5,000%.
Yeah, it was just he's from Golden Fields. That's it. That's his whole backstory. And he tells everyone he's a druid, but all the druids just like, you know, what's the word? They all just say, yeah, sure. They all humor him. But he's literally just a bear with a hat.
Just an awakened bear, and somewhere there's a druid who is like, I may have made a mistake in awakening this bear.
I was just alone. I would love to play an awakened bear. That would be a fun.
I mean, we had awakened horses in the first campaign of Chaos Agents. Andrew, that was your fault.
Awakened horses. Oh. Just wanton awakenings. Actually, I've used the Awaken spell as a plot point in my Gnarled Frontier game, where the faction of evil conglomerate mages who are trying to strip the planet for energy and magic has used Awaken animals as their main workforce and military force.
Oh, so it's Dark Narnia.
Yeah, it's Narnia, but they're all slaves.
Yikes. I love it.
We just awakened all these raccoons so that they will, you know, work the assembly line, right? You know, one of my main bad guys that the party just murdered was named Ganderous the Necro Goose. he is a goose necromancer.
The listeners can't see it, but I just pinched the bridge of my nose at that and just went, yep, no, this is entirely what I expect, actually. And what a way to play on the horrible goose trope.
Exactly. And the picture I had for him was great. And he was also a victim to my bugbear gloom stalker who just ran in the room and deleted him real fast.
Gloomstalker Rangers are broken.
Just was like, I put him on the other side of a room, a bunch of other mages in between them. And he just was like, I teleport there, I murder him. It's like, well, it's a mage. He didn't have time to, he didn't think about putting on mage armor.
Yep.
He wouldn't have had time to react to shield. Wouldn't have mattered anyway because the attack was so high.
Right.
He's got like 14 con, which is good, but
for a wizard, that's great. Die.
It's so God. He's gone.
Bye.
So that was fun. Thanks, Jeremy. but it's a goose. No one cares, right? Like, goodbye, goose.
Poor thing.
I also have a, if you're playing Gnarled Frontier, skip a couple minutes. But I also have a quote-unquote awakened tiger. But it's not an awakened tiger.
Oh?
It's a Rakshasa.
Oh! Oh, no! Whoops!
So that should be fun.
Yes, for a given value of fun. Especially now that you've set up the awakened. That's clever. That's evil. I love it.
Oh, the mages also thought he was an awakened tiger. They just don't remember who did it. Who did the awakening? Who's in charge of this guy?
I mean, that seems like a fun plot point to pull on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But they'll probably just murder him. So anyway, that's my... The Gnarled Frontier gang is really the group of morons, like running around... solving problems on accident, like for the most part. Like,
we are so glad to have you all as patrons of the podcast, and Adam doesn't mean it when he's calling your characters morons, not you.
Exactly. Yeah, the characters are lovably moronic, and they're just good-hearted people doing the best they can as hilariously as they can do it, which we appreciate. Because then we always have the other group that's there for the drama.
The feels.
The feels, yeah. So, anyway, can you think of any interesting group combinations that you would like to try out someday?
I would honestly really love to play a game where everyone is a member of the Emerald Enclave. I was introduced to the Emerald Enclave in not my first D&D game, but the first game that I was in that was streamed. And I love the idea of them, and I want to dig deeper into that. And I mean, the Emerald Enclave in the D&D movie didn't assuage that desire at all. Now I really want to know more about them.
Did you notice that they put the factions into Baldur's Gate 3? Have you gotten enough into it to see them?
I'm in enough that I have met the Zhentarim, and I feel like I've met someone from the Lord's Alliance, but I kind of knew that, or at least I guessed that, because it was like, you know, it made sense. It's Baldur's Gate 3, and that's a great place to put all of the different kinds of factions. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I like knew that all of them in it.
The Grove is Emerald Enclave as well.
That makes sense.
And that comes up again later, but they don't like talk about that up front. That's like behind the scenes.
Well, I mean, that also makes sense because the Emerald Enclave is a little bit more secretive.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
It's kind of like the Harpers in that aspect and the Zhentarim, although for much different reasons.
And the Harpers don't come up for a long time, but when they do, they're a big deal. And so... enjoy that when that happens.
Excellent. I do love the I love the idea of like the Harpers and the Emerald Enclave working together for something. I think that would be a fun story to tell.
Well, and those are two groups that could easily... Well, it would be easy for the Harpers to work. You know, the Enclave, they might need a little bit convincing, but I mean,
So the Enclave would have to come to the Harpers for something. That's the only way I think that could really work.
Yeah, or they would have to, or the Harpers would have to go to the Enclave and then probably undertake some sort of task to win their trust.
Sure.
You know, in order to make that happen. Whereas the Zhentarim, you can work with them, but it's usually just like, pay us and we'll do the thing, right?
Like, yeah.
And then expect that they're going to probably try to betray you.
It's in their insignia. It's a snake. It's going to turn on you. It's going to bite you. That's just,
right.
I'm sorry. I know that actual snakes are not like that, but snakes used in like mythology and imagery. What do you expect?
Right. Yeah. So this is coming, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like what we talked about back in the day with hags, where it's like, if you need it bad enough, they can provide.
They can
but
do it.
There's a cost.
There was a problem with that in my new SKT game where they kept agreeing with the hag over and over, and she kept taking more and more from them, where that just ended up becoming the main problem, right?
Yeah.
So I had one player whose entire story was she was a Leonin that wanted to make her father proud of her, and so when she meets the hag, she says, I want my father to be proud of me. And she's like, granted, I'll make it happen.
Oh, so, boy. Baby girl.
At some point during the campaign, she's killed in battle. And the hag reincarnates her. So she's not a Leonin anymore. She's like a half-orc now. And then we meet the father and the tribe. And the father talks to her like he doesn't know her, really. But after they do a couple of adventures, he's like, wow, you're really cool. Like, you know, any father would be proud of a person like you.
Whoa. Oh, talk about a monkey paw way to get that wish. Holy crap.
And that was very satisfying to do that.
I'll bet that their eyes just got so wide.
Because the player's like, how do I explain this? Can I explain it?
Can you? And the answer is very likely no.
Right. And they didn't.
I wouldn't.
You know, but it's like, yeah, you got your wish. However, hags are fun in that way.
Hags are the best tool for a GM who really wants to, like, pull on heartstrings.
That could also be an interesting way to tie a party together in the beginning is like you're all victims of a vampire. You're all victors of a hag. You're all victims of, you know, enter threat here and you're in their lair. Like even Baldur's Gate 3 opens up with that. You're all victims of the Mind Flayers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you all have the same problem that ties you together. And it works a little bit better in Baldur's Gate because like it's almost entirely NPCs. So you're like, okay, they're going to get along somehow. Like
somehow.
They're going to go through the arcs. There's no worry about the actress really hating you on a personal level. Right? Like you kind of can wave away the Lazelle and Shadowheart drama because you know it's going somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. You're not worried about the two players like getting into a fight. So
I mean, you mentioned earlier about all of the players being a single class. There is a short shot module that I really want to run. It's called like a Bard Out of Hell. Uh-huh. And the idea behind it is that everyone is full bard or a multi-class bard.
Right.
And the one thing that is on everyone's character sheet is 7 years ago, someone did something that where you made a bargain to make your bard career take off, whether mm-hmm. that was they provided you a great instrument or they introduced you to the right people or just like set up circumstances that things really worked out for you. And the condition was in 7 years, you had to come and give a performance for them. And now the debt has come due.
Wow.
And then you all find yourselves in a lair of hell where the devil that you made a contract with is calling in the deal.
Uh-huh, yeah. So,
and then you get to deal with that.
So now it's a climb out of hell kind of problem.
Yep, and figure out, well, what is the actual problem? Like, what if we just give the performance? What's the worst that could happen?
Well, funny you should ask. it's fun to be a mischievous GM.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it could be a lot of fun to to cross those wires with people.
Yeah. But I do, I do love the, because that's basically Strahd, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like everyone is pulled into Barovia through the mists. And I love the idea of everyone being, you know, you have a common cause then, because you no matter where you've come from, you've all been personally victimized by Regina George.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You have a reason to stick together and do the thing, whatever the thing is.
It's like, wow, I didn't come here to hunt down a vampire, but now I am.
Now that's all I can think about doing.
Now it's all I can think about doing, because F that guy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, it's just a fun way to come up with an idea. Like I said before, I'm with my student group. I'm going to be doing a Runeterra game. And Runeterra is really interesting based on its different factions and its countries, as they have warring nations, right? And so I've been writing some custom backgrounds to facilitate. So like if you're from Noxus, you get certain things. If you're from Demacia, you get different things. I know these words mean nothing to you, but they, you know, just enter country name here or city name, whatever.
I know the Demacia name because a friend of mine plays League of Legends and his character always yells Demacia.
Okay. Yeah.
Whoever he mains.
So it's either Garen or Jarvan. Yeah.
I think it's Garen.
Yeah.
That name sounds familiar.
Yeah. Yeah. Garen's the most well known for it because he yells Demacia while spinning around.
Fair enough. That's a good reason.
His character is that he's a tanky guy who presses E and then he spins his sword around in a tornado, and that's it. That's his mate. It's great. He's fun to play.
One of these days, I'm going to get you to teach me how to play League of Legends.
Oh, God.
I've never played it. It looks confusing.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot. I would love to teach you Teamfight Tactics because I love that game. But you have to enjoy kind of a slower paced game.
I mean,
that's very economic and like it feels kind of like chess, but you don't have to be, you know, some super genius to play it.
That honestly sounds like way more my speed because I've never liked games like Overwatch or, you know, first person shooter games that are just so fast.
Oh, yeah.
Because I have a hard time reacting quickly enough.
When you first play Teamfight Tactics, you're going to be like, wow, that's a lot of information. But you'll be surprised how quickly you pick it all up. And right now, the current set is all based on music.
Ooh.
And so the different factions are like country and heavy metal and pop and emo and like all these things. And so depending on what characters you put on your board, the music changes that's playing in the background.
Well, now you have my interest. You had my curiosity and now you have my interest.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. So I'll probably play some later today if you want to ping me or whatever and say, hey, I'm down for an hour.
Maybe. I have other things that I'm doing this afternoon, but if I have time, I'd love to.
Awesome. It's also mobile, so.
Hey.
Although the PC version is far better.
Well, I mean.
Because, of course.
Having the processing power is kind of important.
Kind of. A little bit.
A little bit.
All right. Well, why don't you wrap us up and take us home? Anybody else that wants to play TFT with me, just join our Discord at the $20 level. At any level. Just kidding. But 20 is great.
Thank you all so much for joining us for this episode of Inspiration Point. We gathered you up as a brief faction, and now we release you back out into the world. But thank you all so much for being part of this conversation with us. Adam jokes, but do join our Discord. Our Discord is a fantastic place to hang out and chat about things. And yeah, we have a good time. So until next time, stay inspired.
Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Inspiration Point. If you'd like to support what we do, go and check out our Patreon at patreon.com/inspirationpoint. If you can't support us directly, that's okay. You can also help support us by telling people about the podcast. A little inspiration goes a long way.
Inspiration Point is edited and produced by Tiana Hansen and is distributed by Quest and Chaos. If you like what you hear with us, give Quest and Chaos YouTube or Twitch channels a visit. They play Dungeons & Dragons on a weekly basis and have a bunch of campaigns of Call of Cthulhu, D&D, and board game playthroughs archived on their YouTube.
Join us next week for more inspiration.